and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 451. My name is James Gilmore, and joining me today is Rick Cowley.
Hello.
Hi, buddy. How's it going?
It's good. I'm really sleepy today for some reason.
Em's not with us today because she has... I think our folks are appearing at some point over the course of the day, and she didn't want to have headphones on her head and ignore her family in the rare instance that they turn up at her home.
Fair enough, really.
Which I can understand. If you want to know why she's shunning you, beautiful listeners, it's because she has other friends and people who are related to her who demand her attention. However, my mum knocked on my door earlier this morning. I opened it, saw it was, slammed it in her face... because I said, no, Mum, I'm sorry, I've got to do the podcast and I've got my priorities straight.
I haven't spoken to my parents in months. That's when I started on the podcast. And I called up my mother and said, no, I will never see you again. I am a podcaster now.
We exist in a vacuum. Someone occasionally passes me some news through the membrane that separates me and the outer world, and only news can pass. So take Indeed. Your maternal affection and shove it. See what we go through, guys? See what we do? We're literally divorcing
Suffering
our families
from
now.
For our art.
Art.
Chatting about video games.
And chatting rubbish about video games. chat which we have a lot of this week. So the continuing Fortnite saga. You can actually start playing it right now on Android if you've got the right email address and invite, of course. We've got NetEase slagging off Nintendo fans because they've made a game. It looks very similar to the Breath of the Wild, and Nintendo fans aren't very happy about it. Also, Luigi Gate happened. That's right. Nintendo made the shocking decision to kill off Luigi, and the internet has had a meltdown. I've never seen more people freaking out over the death of a fictional character before. It's insane. This is some Twin Peaks stuff. We've also got an interview with the creators of Sneak Ops, one of my favourite new release games from this week, which is bringing stealth to iOS in a fun and accessible form. Plus new releases including the likes of Sneak Ops, Vista Golf, Old TV, Overcooked 2, and more. But first, it's the news. There's not a week that can go by in mobile gaming where we don't talk about Fortnite in some capacity. Just a quickie this week. The Android beta has officially gone live. If you signed up for it via email, then you'll be notified at some point. Invite only, I guess. But you can only get involved at the moment if you have a certain device. So, they're rolling it out in stages, and that first stage is people with Samsung Galaxy devices. So anyone who's got, here comes the list, S7, S7 Edge, S8, S8 Plus, S9, S9 Plus, Note 8, Note 9, Tab S3, or Tab S4. Any of them, you will be able to, within the next few days, play Fortnite on your Android in beta form. More devices will be rolled out in the future. There's a big list of which ones will be available, and it's most of them. So Pixels and Asus Games and Huawei and Nokia and yada, yada, yada. So you're all on the list. They'll get to you eventually. But in the meantime, if you are part of the Galaxy crew, you are in luck. Play Fortnite to your heart's content. Now, I don't know if you'll be familiar with NetEase. You'll probably be familiar with a bunch of their games, but they're one of the extremely big Asian developers, of which there are a few. Tencent's the one we probably talk about most, I'd say, on here. Mm-hmm. But you're not necessarily familiar with the brand, but you're familiar with all the games because they've got tons and tons and tons of mostly free-to-play stuff under their belt that makes an incredible amount of money for them. They're very big. So big, it seems, that they've decided that they can rag on Nintendo and all PC gamers. That's what they did. So there is a game that they've released, which is called Operation Wind Cloud Island. Now, a few people online noticed that, hey, this game looks quite similar in a number of very clear and obvious ways to the latest Zelda, Breath of the Wild. Someone posted up a few screenshots and was like, hey, hang on a minute, you guys are massively ripping off this game. This is outrageous. They responded on their official Twitter channel for the game, Operation Wind Cloud Island. Obviously, it was in Chinese, but a bunch of people went in and decided to translate it. And what it amounts to, and this is from like a Chinese Nintendo account, which is paraphrasing it, They basically made a comment that designed deliberately to offend both Nintendo and Sony fans. We should say that the comment has subsequently been deleted, but it was just a little joke. Just a little joke they made about how Nintendo fans who don't think smartphone games are real games, that they suck, before saying that all PC games are superior to Switch games. they went PC Master Race in their tweet. And apparently derogatory terms were used when talking about Nintendo and Sony fans. Now, the comment's just been deleted, but of course it's the internet, so there are copies of it up everywhere. It was followed up with an apology. The account did apparently apologise.
Nice.
And they went on and tweeted out a little picture of a Switch saying, actually, we are Switch fans. Look, here's our Switch. Turns out that photo was actually just a generic photo that Nintendo had released. So it was supposed to be like, look, we're Switch fans, here's our Switch. And it's just like a stock photo shot of a Switch. Mm-hmm. So it sounds to me like even the apology was a bit of a troll as well. But I like how this caused, like, actual waves online. It seems like such a non-thing to me.
Yeah.
Because it's tweeted from the official account, and clearly they were just, to me it sounds like they were making a joke. I don't know, because I don't speak Chinese, I can't read the direct translation. I don't know if their language was particularly, like, risque or offensive in a way that doesn't translate to me. But from the sounds of it, they were just going, lol, yeah, well, all Switch games are rubbish anyway, and mobile games are awesome. So a bit of a shrug there, but you've got the apology listed up on the site if you care to read it. But, you know, don't get too excited. The truly shocking thing this week had nothing to do with NetEase and everything to do with Nintendo slaughtering one of their two main characters in a trailer for Super Smash Bros. Ultimate. And my God, the meltdowns I've seen online, the absolute shock and horror that came from not just fans, but journos, people I know and respect, who freaked out when they saw the trailer and that they saw the fact that in this trailer, Luigi gets killed, actually killed on screen by death.
It's a beautiful moment of just pure, what the hell is going on? I think you were saying to me a few weeks ago about the horror movie moment, you don't kill the kid, you don't kill the Luigi, and they did it. And it's like, what?
Yes, the unwritten rules about you cannot break them, so who knows what's going to happen next. Yeah, apparently icing Luigi on screen is a bridge too far for a lot of people. Now, I've seen the screenshots that people posted going like, OMG, like, wah! Like the shock tweet, and then the image of like Luigi lying on the ground. I've not actually watched it yet, but I've queued it up to the point in the trailer, which I should point out is nothing to do with Luigi. The trailer is Simon and Richter Belmont's character reveal. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. But I've got it queued up, and I am now going to watch and describe blow by blow what happens in the trailer. So it starts at the very beginning. Let's go. I'm playing. So we've got... Oh, Luigi's looking a bit frightened. He's got a suction thing from Luigi's Mansion. He's firing it at a little mummy. Oh, he's a plunger in his face. Ah, it's all good fun at the minute. Comedy bants. Doesn't do anything, though, so he legs it. He legs it into what looks like a church tavern. Oh, there's a lot of pink and purple light. Very nice. The statue's turning and looking at him. He's got demon eyes. He's freaking out. This is all very jovial so far. So far, Luigi's Mansion. But now he's legged it away. He's tripped over. Oh, he's getting up. He's shaking his head. He's turned his light on and... Oh, it's the actual Grim Reaper. Oh, God. He's massive and death-looking. He's freaking out. He's screaming. His eyes have rolled back in his head. Okay. Yeah, so, all right.
Do you see now?
Well, he full-on swings his big Grim Reaper thing and literally whacks the soul out of Luigi.
Yeah. He is dead. There is no coming back from that.
Hold on a minute, was it not death? Are we saying that death wasn't actually death? And oh no, okay. No, the person who's rocked up to take on death is Simon Belmont.
Yeah.
That's the big character reveal there. And then there's a little bit as a coda at the end, isn't it? So I'm just skipping to the end here. And it's Luigi's ghost floating around his body. His body, which has like the white eyes and the mouth wide open. That's the shot I saw on Twitter a lot. That's quite horrifying.
It is,
I like it.
Dark, it's beautiful. But there are a lot of theories surrounding it now, of course.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing that happened was shortly after the Direct ended, the UK Nintendo UK Versus account, which is their specific competitive gaming Twitter account, posted out a quick thing saying, Luigi is okay.
So, yes, I saw that as well.
Which was hilarious.
Well, he's climbing back into his body. The soul is clambering back into the body
in
the trailer. So
I haven't seen the trailer, so I just thought he was just dead.
Okay, I imagine he'll be all right. I think it's just the shot. I think that's what freaked everybody out. It's the shot of Luigi, like, with no pupils or irises, just white eyes and his mouth, like, and a rictus death, like, grin, lying on the floor.
The other part of the theory is there's this mystery mode that's been kind of teased in the menus and stuff. And people have been looking at the Japanese and the English. And if you look at it carefully and change the brightness and stuff like that, you can see that it says spirits. And people are wondering now if maybe this is a new kind of story mode that involves, like, the ghosts and spirits of the Nintendo characters in some way. And that's why you see Luigi getting killed. It's because they're actually teasing a new game mode involving spirits.
Spirit Wars.
Or something like that.
That could be interesting, I guess.
So that could be a thing.
I'm all for this. I say slaughter all the Nintendo hero characters one by one.
It's kind of what they're doing in all the trailers, because when they first revealed Ridley, like, Ridley straight up killed Mario, Samus, and I think Mega Man, and somebody else as well.
Who?
Like, he just straight up stabs them with his tail. And that's pretty violent and gruesome as well. And then there was something at the end, I haven't seen the full thing, but there's something at the end of the Direct where King Dedede's got Donkey Kong and Diddy Kong in a cage and is laughing at them, and then I think King Dedede gets killed by King K. Rool.
Oh, I see.
Which is just bizarre.
Well, it's a fighting game. Like, I mean, that's how every fight ends. You kill everyone else on screen.
But it's Smash Bros. You knock people off a platform. It's not death.
Well, they plummet to their death, squished on the floor, just because you don't see it. Death is inferred, Rick. Like in life. Does show you how emotionally invested people are in these characters and how well Nintendo has kind of created a brand style to their games. Because death in games is really common. Like, as I just said there, it's a fighting game. You fight your opponent till they die. And sometimes you can say, yes, all right, they've been knocked out. It's a KO, it's not death. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in games all the time, your hero characters are going around just blowing the crap out of a whole bunch of anonymous people, and that's how a lot of gaming works. It's really adversarial, and often it's kind of fight for survival stuff.
Yep.
So people die left, right, and center. Nintendo games are often a little bit different because they are softer, and they do have that element of Mario's, like, punching blocks or jumping on the heads of creatures, and there is an element of, like, they just go turn upside down and go boop and drop off, and it's not like a gory, nasty death. So death isn't as present, I don't think, in a lot of Nintendo games as it is in other games. You don't feel like you're slaughtering your way through Super Mario Brothers, for example. You feel like you're kind of knocking turtles out the way, almost.
Yeah.
And obviously the characters themselves have been eternal. They've been featured in so many things. But the reason this freaked everyone out so much, I think it was the realization that actually we've been with these characters for, I don't know, 30 years or something, and we've never seen him die like that. Like, actually die. And introduce the idea into people's heads that, like, they could actually die, like, knocked out with the life out of their face, suddenly rigor mortis. And it's like, it almost looked like it was some kind of fan trailer.
Yeah.
The one that always sticks in my head is when they did that thing for Yogi Bear, where when they did the 3D versions of the Yogi Bear and Boo Boo movies, and this was about 10 years ago, at least, I think, someone did their own version, which was mimicking the end of another movie, and it basically amounted to Yogi Bear, like, standing up in front of the fireplace and someone walking in and just blowing the back of his head out with a shotgun.
Christ.
But it's the juxtaposition of the, you know, the family fluffy characters that you know and the grim realization of your own mortality sort of smashed together to make something horrific. And that's what this is. And Nintendo did it themselves.
The other interesting thing, which I just remembered, is that I believe there's going to be a Grim Reaper's Scythe item in the game. So you'll be able to do this to all of the characters. It's not just Luigi who's going to die. All of the characters are going to have their souls ripped from their bodies in levels.
Oh, nice.
I think.
Well, that would be a cool dynamic, cat. Like, if you're able to kill a character, and then instead of them just dying outright, maybe their spirit flies out of their body, and you can control the spirit. But the spirit has a limited or very particular moveset.
Mm.
So once you're dead, you're kind of dead, but you could maybe, like, interfere with the game in another way.
Yeah.
The game's set to go live on December the 7th, isn't it? That's the release date for Smash Bros. Ultimate. So more trailers to come, no doubt. But yes, go watch the trailer if you fancy a giggle. And seeing the death of a beloved character, the lols. There are a bunch of stealth games available on mobile, and a lot of them done actually to pretty good effect. You've got the likes of Counter Spy, Deus Ex The Fall, if you can remember that far back. We now have a new stealth game on the scene, Sneak Ops, which came out this week from indie studio Gripmaniacs, and I'm delighted to be joined by Rodrigo Diaz, which is one half of Gripmaniacs. Rodrigo, thanks for joining us.
Hello, thank you, James.
So I've been playing it most of this morning for a video review, and I liked it so much that I immediately jumped on online and Twitter to try and find out if I can chat to you guys. So thanks for doing this at last minute. Now that it's out there, I mean, it literally launched yesterday. There's just two of you at the studio. What's it been like for you? Is this the first game that you've launched as a studio?
Yeah, it's our first serious game launched as Gripmaniacs. We have previous experience both in regular games and mobile games, but this is our first game together.
If listeners haven't played it, then it is a top-down pixel art grid-based stealth game in which you play a little sneak operative who's trying to dash between effectively different rooms which are ever scrolling upwards. It's a point-and-click interface where you just tap a tile and a line is drawn and your character will kind of take the shortest route. You have to then avoid getting spotted by soldiers and sentries, video cameras, that sort of thing. A lot of people bounce off the stealth genre.
I think
there are a lot of people who find it quite slow-paced. They find it frustrating. You have to spend a lot of time sitting in one place, watching and learning the movements of characters so that you can predict what they're going to do and then jump out. And for some people who are maybe more action-oriented or want to jump out and just, why can't I shoot the guy? They get frustrated with that. And because of those, some of those gameplay tropes require you to sit there for quite a long period of time. I imagine it doesn't really suit mobile gaming. You've managed to compress everything to make the loop very, very short and to give these quick bursts of stealth. How did you manage to streamline the formula?
First of all, we wanted to get a successful formula. So being big fans of Nitrom, we decided to get the core loop of Leap Day and then build our game around it. The thing is that the first iterations of the game were really slow and you had to wait for the guards to just clear the path or try to make sounds and lure them. And after some testing, we saw that that was not really fun. It was very slow to play a game like that. And we did some soft launch for the game and we saw that only the more hardcore players were the ones that were sticking up. So we decided to casualize it a bit more, make this, there's this game design technique that tells you to just double the speed of the game until it becomes unplayable. So we did it like two times and we made it. Yeah.
Okay.
The third time it became unplayable. So we left it in just two times. And the game became way more dynamic. We made the puzzles more fast to see what you had to do, not waiting like for 10 seconds for some guards to move around. And I think that's what really improved the game because it made more affordable to other more casual players. But the hardcore ones didn't complain about it. They just kept it working and didn't complain that the game was easier or less stealth. So we think we made the right decision with that.
Gotcha. And I don't think it loses any tension from it being quite fast-paced. It keeps it moving along at a decent speed, and it also serves you better if you're a mobile player and you want to just, I don't know, pick it up for 5 minutes here and there and just play like a little bit of a level. You're quite generous with the checkpointing, I think, because you have the option, it's a free-to-play game, but you have the option to either spend the diskettes that you collect over the course of the levels to activate save points, or you can just watch a trailer. That reminded me, and I mentioned it in the review, of Nitrom. So it's interesting you mentioned that Nitrom is an inspiration for you there. What is it about their games that you like or that you feel you wanted to draw from?
It's the visual style, because Eduardo, the artist, likes to do pixel art, and it's the overall feel of cartoony and bright visuals.
rather than doing a dual stick control or floating control or D-pad or something, you've gone for the point to move tile based system. Did it ever exist in a different form? Did you try dual sticks?
No, one of the main targets we had with the game was to translate an existing formula to an all touch screen interface, because we just don't like the touch joystick that other games do, and mm-hmm. we wanted to make this clear from the beginning. And there's a lot of work involved, because, for example, at first we had a button where you could tap and make a noise just to distract the guards or make them move to your position. But yeah. we ended taking it out because it took a lot of space and didn't just feel right with everything else being contextual.
And you've also got an element of that sound distraction thing where you have certain tiles where if you step on them, they will actually make a noise and alert the nearby guards. And you can use that as a distraction as well if you want to.
Yeah, yeah. We decided to change the button and just add the static tiles in some parts of the map. Showing that in the tutorial, it's a bit confusing for the players, because we like to use them for passes. Like if you step on this place, this guard is going to come back for you, and then you can just sneak around in this other part. But it seems to be one of the things that the players are most struggling with. So we may need to rethink them.
I think that was, I mean, I guess you have to do a bit of lateral thinking, but when you introduced the tiles and it became clear that they got alerted, you see it as like, oh, I should avoid these. But then later on in the stages, you do realize, actually, if I step on this and then run away, they'll go to my location, the location I last was, which is the ghost image in a lot of stealth games, where that little superimposition of here's where the enemies last heard you. It forms the same kind of function as knocking on a wall or flicking a coin, or I think in Battlefield recently, it's throwing bullet casings or whatever it is, that distraction technique. But it's a nice, simple, kind of clean way of doing it. The way you're unlocking the levels is quite unique as well, because you've got these levels that play out as long, effectively, corridors set with different rooms in them, mm-hmm. and then a helicopter at the end. They're quite lengthy. You need to go through about, like, you know, 10, 15 rooms in order to get to the end of them. But you are unlocking one of these levels, one of these stages, every day. Is that right?
Yeah, you get a different one every day.
And so, I mean, I turned the game on this morning and you have access to already like 10, 14 of them, something like that?
Yeah, if you play today's level, you can access it and then unlock it for any time you want to play it again. And if you missed one of the past levels, you can unlock them with watching a video.
How long is that going to go on for? How many levels do you have in the can already?
Actually, it's kind of infinite, because for making the game, we make these small rooms, separate ones. In each checkpoint, you have two of those rooms. And then we classify them based on the gameplay elements they have. And then we have an algorithm that just uses today's date as a random seed, and then selects these random rooms and assembles the level on the fly.
Right, I see.
As long as there are new days, it's going to... In 1 year or so, you may see duplicate levels, but with future updates, we are going to add more content. So you will keep coming back and seeing new chunks and effectively new levels.
Gotcha. So as this was the first game for your studio, the two of you working together there, how long did this take from like beginning to end, from conception to release?
It has taken about 14 months. We had some periods of full-time working and some periods of part-time, because both of us are freelancers. And the game was quite different at first. It came from an idea that Eduardo had a long time ago. You were like some kind of detective that were chased by some... They were like this... Typical guys with suits and sunglasses. Mm-hmm. And the overall look was really different. One of the scenarios was a tube station, and it was more dark and different. And there came a moment where we found that it was really, really hard to iterate on that concept. And we just thought, what if we just do this like cartoony Metal Gear inspired thing? And then we found that it was funnier than it was easier for us to just author new content. Say, for example, we are going to put this area where you are outside of the base, then this area has these foundry elements. So I think that was a really good decision because it gave us the option to keep working faster on the game.
It did make me think of the original Metal Gear before it went all, you know, before even the PS1 version, that I think it was 16-bit version that they originally did. It made me think of that as well. But because it's quite cartoony and you've gone with the sort of big head design and everything, it does feel a little bit less serious and somber than some stealth games, which can often be quite dark and moody and take themselves quite seriously, which I think is to this one's favour. Again, it all factors in to me to feel a bit more inviting for people, and that's one of the reasons I kind of wanted to champion this one, because I really like stealth as a genre, but I understand that a lot of people find it tough to get into, and for me this feels like a good bridging game where you can introduce the idea of it to people in a way that's a little bit easier to grab onto.
Yeah,
and then maybe that might feed into them, I don't know, maybe we'll give something else a try and you know, go a bit more serious, or you know, give Metal Gear a go.
Yeah, I think the brighter colors and the overall mood is something that really draws your attention instead of just coming across the typical dark ambient, dark game that you see almost every time. So
are you guys going to be focusing on this and updating this for the near future, or have you already got something else that you're working on?
Yes, our idea is if this performs good enough, we are going to ship more content updates, because if people keep playing the game, they're going to see that it's a bit repetitive after maybe 15 days or so. So our idea is to ship more ambiences, more gameplay features, and probably some events or like special weeks. For example, we are thinking about a Halloween-themed week where you start playing and maybe the enemies are, instead of these balaclava soldiers, they have these Halloween pumpkin heads. So those are just things that we are thinking about to update the game with in the following months.
Well, that's great. Well, thank you ever so much for talking to us today. The game is Sneak Ops and is available on iPhone and iPad right now. Is it also out on Android?
Yes, it's on Android too.
Android as well. All right, then. Well, Rodrigo, thanks for talking to us today. Best of luck with the release.
Thanks to you, James.
Out and about this week, we've got a bunch of mobile games to go. But first, Rick, you've been playing... It's Overcooked 2, isn't it?
It is.
The long-awaited. I know that you and Em were having... You were playing it over the weekend, weren't you?
Yes. Em did the review, but I was given a code so we could try out the online. Because that's the big new thing in Overcooked 2, is that you can play online with up to 4 people in a game.
Now, I have to admit, I've never played Overcooked or Overcooked 2. I assume it's got something to do with food. But I'm clueless on this. What is Overcooked?
Overcooked? I can't believe you've not played Overcooked. So it's,
I don't have a Switch!
But it's on other consoles.
Oh, all right. Well,
then it's on all the consoles, and I think it's on PC, and you're a failure. Anyway, Overcooked 2...
Damn.
...is sort of a party game puzzler type thing, where you're all working in a kitchen, and you've got to prep the food, cook the food, and then serve the food, and then clean some plates afterwards and keep doing that. And so orders come along the top. It'll say, oh, you need a burger, and this burger has to have lettuce, but no cheese and tomato. And so you chop up the ingredients, you put the steak in to cook, and then you assemble the things, and you put it on a plate and send it out. And, you know, that sounds fairly easy and boring. So what they do instead is they have all the kitchens just try and mess with you. So sometimes you'll be working on 2 river boats that are just rotating around each other, and you'll have to work out when's the right time to run to the other side, cook the thing and run back again so you can actually serve it. Or sometimes the whole kitchen will just disappear into some liquid boiling lava or something, and you've got to sort of stand still and make sure you were in the right place, or just waste precious seconds and then miss the order.
Okay.
And it just gets crazier and crazier. And Overcooked 2 is no exception at all. They've upped the amount of craziness, so now there's like teleporters in some levels, there's huge gaps that you can't cross, there's the aforementioned stage disappearing, all this kind of stuff. And it's just hectic and insane and horrible and really stressful, and like, I'm fairly certain I shouted at Em a couple of times while we were playing it. Probably
so you're playing it cooperatively.
Yes, we were playing it cooperatively. Idea. You can play it versus mode as well, but you can play it cooperatively, which is more fun because it's just chaotic and stupid.
So I've played a version of these games on mobile, a couple of them actually. Mm-hmm. So where you have to do the kitchen prep and you need to pre-make the food based on people, you know, they're coming up and they're ordering stuff and you've got a limited number of dishes. And you have to kind of anticipate what bits you're going to need in order to stop the queue backing up all the way. But they were just me and it was, you just got the kitchen laid out in front of you and you're just tapping, make this, make this, make this, and then dragging the dishes onto the counter.
Yeah.
This is actually like you've got full control of a character, haven't you? Running around and you have to, you know, it's like full, top down.
Full 3D environment to run around and you can bump into your fellow cooks. So if you are stood in someone's way, they can't just pass through you. You've got to physically shout at each other to move around.
Okay,
and that
okay.
kind of thing. And sometimes like fires will start in the kitchen. And if there's a fire, you can't get to that spot and it's completely blocked off. So you need to get the fire extinguisher and take that out. And you can dash as well. And if you dash into somebody, then you knock them off in a distance kind of thing. So if you're on a level that doesn't have walls or anything, you can just knock them off and kill them for 5 seconds by complete accident.
Okay, this I'm looking at footage. This looks fun. The new version, so Overcooked 2, the differences are multiplayer is new?
So it was always multiplayer, but this is online multiplayer is new.
Oh, okay.
And it works really well. We played it for about an hour. It was a pre-release, so there wasn't the day one patch or anything. There was a couple of bugs, but it was okay, and I'm fairly certain they'll have been patched out by now. But in terms of lag, like there was nothing. It was perfect. We were both playing along perfectly well and didn't have any problems whatsoever. The other new thing, and it doesn't sound like much, but you can throw things now. So if you've got ingredients in your hand, you can just chuck them across the stage and they will arrive wherever you happen to throw them. So you can throw them directly into your partner's hand and then they can sort of deal with it. Oops, sorry. Or you can throw it into a pot and it'll start cooking, or you can throw it into a chopping board and it will stick to the chopping board ready for chopping, or you can just throw it on the floor. And you leave stuff there. So they've designed whole levels around this mechanic where there's just huge gaps that you can't cross. So you'll need to pick things up, throw them to the other person, and then if you need to cook it, then they'll throw it back once they've chopped it kind of thing. And you've got to sort of work through that as well. But you can't throw frying pans or plates or anything. So that, you know, you just got to work out all the different ways the mechanic sort of operates. So it's one button and it's one tiny thing, but it completely changes the game. It's the first game, but made better. And that's all it really needed to be, because Overcooked is absolutely amazing, and Overcooked 2 just takes it to the next level.
Brilliant. Well, we've given it 9 out of 10. Em's got the review up on Pocket Gamers. Go and have a look at that. Well, I'm going to go with what's probably my mobile game of the week, which is Sneak Ops, which I hadn't played till this morning. Was playing it for the review and ended up playing it for about 2 hours because I need to get footage that's not just the first level, and B, I was having a really good time. So it is a top-down grid-based sneaky stealth game. It feels a bit Nitrome, even though it's not made by Nitrome. It's got that vibe and that look to it. And what it's doing is it is stripping down the stealth genre, so it's clearly influenced or riffing a little bit on things like Metal Gear Solid, right down to the sort of grey and blue aesthetic, the fact that you're a little secret agent dude who's sneaking through what looks like a warehouse. You've got guards who wander around on set patterns, some of which are asleep and you can sneak past without any problem. You've got the classic cones of vision system, both for the guards who are wandering around in their set cycles and also cameras that are up on the wall. So you can sneak under the classic camera dead spot and then move around. Because it shortens everything down into these really manageable bite-sized chunks, it makes it feel a lot quicker and more immediate and less stressful to some degree. So the levels kind of flow and are broken up by checkpoints that maybe like sort of 8 or 10 checkpoints in a level. So they're quite long levels. The control system's nice because it's just grid-based. So you tap. You just tap where you want to go and your dude will run to that. Kind of as the crow flies, it'll take the shortest route. But if you want to make sure you don't run, for example, across the path of one of the sentries or one of the soldiers, you just, you know, tap short distances, go up there and then left here and then down here and da-da-da-da-da. And that's the way to get around it. But it keeps adding lots of new stuff in. So there are little tunnels that you can dive into and then you'll pop up on another bit of the level. You get some rooms which are full of gas, so you can only stay in them for a very short period of time before you run out of oxygen. Some of the guards are impermeable, so they can't be killed. So you will run up and bop them and they just turn around and shoot you in the face. You're like, oops. And stuff like that. So it manages to keep it fresh. But For me, what it does is it makes the genre really accessible to people. Because you can jump between these checkpoints in maybe like, you know, in some cases like 30 seconds between checkpoints, between sections of a level. Some will take longer later on because you do have to memorize some patterns. But it just makes it really easy to jump into and jump out of. Mm-hmm. And it's quite fast paced and quite tense as well. I'm really impressed at how it strips back a lot of stuff, but keeps the core of it, which is the tension, the do the remembering, the choose your moment to jump out. But you're not stuck on a level for like, you know, 30 minutes or something. This isn't like a Hitman or a Metal Gear Solid or something like that. So I'd really recommend people give this a go. It's free in a good way where you can pay, I think, £1.99 to unlock and get rid of the ads. Or just watch an ad in between. And more than most games, this isn't an intrusive. It doesn't feel as intrusive. I don't mind when the ad pops up. I'm like, okay. And then you can skip past them after 5 seconds and then carry on. So it's a very generous free-to-play game, I think.
Cool.
And just a good game in general. So Sneak Ops, that's got the silver review from us, and we reckon you should give it a go. Something that you and I have both played, and that's been out on Steam for a while now, Old TV.
Mm.
This is basically a panic attack of a game, isn't it?
Something like that, yeah.
So explain to the people how this one works.
So it's some test that I keep seeing the name of and then immediately forgetting. But it's a thing where it shows up a word, and the word is a name of a colour, and then that word is a specific, like the colour of the font.
Yeah.
Either matches the word that it says or is different. And if the name of the colour and the colour it actually is match, then you tap on the right of the screen, and if they don't, mm-hmm. you tap left. And that's all the game really is. But it has this weird CRT effect, so it's like you're sat directly in front of an old TV, as it happens. And it's just loud noises and things happening really quickly, and if you go too slow, you fail, and it just... And, like, as soon as you start playing it, you think, okay, this is okay, and then it just start. You get into the proper main game following on the tutorial, and, like, my brain was fried after two runs, and I barely got anywhere. There was one, I started one and I immediately got it wrong and just had to quit out because the first answer was incorrect because I was dead in the brain by that point. And as you can tell from my stuttering, I'm still recovering from playing this game. It completely messed with me.
I played it a little longer, I think, than you. I unlocked some of the countries because the idea is you're flicking through channels and every time you choose a color, you change channel. Mm-hmm. And you have different regions you can unlock as you play through. And the wrinkles it starts throwing at you is a bit mental because, as you say, the crux is just like, does the color of the word match the word itself? Is red red, or is red actually colored in yellow? And that's it. That's the color. That's the game.
Yep.
But the more you play, A, it starts making a lot of horrible noises that sounds like an old modem dial-up.
Oh, God.
So it's sort of like all that stuff going on in the background. Then it starts changing the color of the background of the screen to mess you up. Then it starts spinning the alignment of the word itself. So it starts like flipping it horizontally, so it's backwards, or spinning it upside down, the whole screen. So it's constantly like changing the environment and the format that the stuff is being thrown at you as well. And all of this is against the clock. And it is designed to be an assault on your senses and just make you panic. And you're supposed to just stay cool, calm, and zen, and just be focusing on whether the color of the word represents the word. I quite liked it. It's horrible and obnoxious, and I think I quite enjoyed it. But it is just that one trick. It's a, you know, it's a high score chasing game. Just keep going and going and going, and it will give you a headache after not that long.
It's a very Marmite game, I would say. You're either going to love it and instantly click with it, or just hate it outright.
Yeah, I think John Monday reviewed it and gave it a 6, being like, it's an interesting game and it's got a striking aesthetic. Whether it's enjoyable is something else. It's more of like a real, like, can you hack it? Like, can your brain take it for long enough? So, epilepsy warning on that one, definitely.
Yes.
But Old TV, all one word, is the name of that one, and that is free. I think an advert pops up occasionally if you carry on playing it. That's out now. Kings and Assassins has appeared. Now, this is a digital board game conversion from Asmodee Digital, who we work with our Table Tap section. I haven't played barely any of this yet, but I will be playing it on the stream on Tuesday. So we do a stream with them every week, 5 p.m. in the UK time, 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 midday Eastern, if you're in the States, I think. So that's going to be Tuesday the 14th. If you want to see me learning, basically, how to play Kings and Assassins on Steam for about 90 minutes, you can tune in to Asmodee Digital on Twitch, is the name of the channel. Seek it out, and I will be there. We haven't reviewed it yet, but we'll obviously be looking into that dead quick. A few other releases that we got out this week. Escape from Chernobyl appeared, which I can't remember if we mentioned on a previous podcast, but this is from the same guys who did... Oh God, what's the name of the other games?
Radiation Island.
Yeah. This is part of like a trilogy or something of games that are all very similar insofar as they're first-person open-world survival games. And it's all a little bit Fallout, all a little bit Stalker. They work... I think we had some issues with the last one. They always feel very rough around the edges, the previous games. So I like them, but they feel a bit empty, and I couldn't wholeheartedly recommend them, really. But I haven't played this one. So I think the series has been fairly popular. I interviewed them a while back, I think. It's a premium game, $4.99 if you want to take a look at it. We'll have a look at it as soon as we've got codes or whatever. Also out is Meow Wars, or as the game insists on shouting every 15 seconds, Meow Wars. I'm not lying. It genuinely does that. Every time you switch between menus or start a new game, a little interstitial title card flies across the screen with the accompanying Meow Wars. And I was like, that's cute the first time. 21st time, maybe less so. But it's a card game. It's a card game where you're a cat and you've got a bunch of cards. They're actually like traditional playing cards in the look, only they have the classic kind of attack on in one corner stat and health in the other corner. And you're dealing three cards out at a time and you're using those cards to attack your opponent's cards. You've got a hand that you basically need to get rid of. Actually, I don't know. Do you need to get rid of it or do you just need to take out all of your opponent's
cards? You need to take out all your opponent's cards, yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting confused. So you just fight your way through. I've only played the first few levels of this, and so it's fairly simple, I thought, as far as a card game goes, because it is just the attack stat and the defense stat. I didn't see any modifiers pop up or special powers or anything. So, and there wasn't like a mana... What am I thinking of? A mana repository, which you need to draw from or wait for it to charge up. It's just keep drawing the cards till you've got no cards left. First person with no cards dies.
I think it goes a little bit more in depth than that. Did you go up against the catnip lady?
Did you encounter them? No.
So yeah, no. The sort of one mission you encounter somebody who uses catnip cards, and if they play catnip cards, then as long as there is one in play, then every other card on the deck gets a +2 attack. So there are modifiers and stuff in there. The other thing I thought was interesting was when you attack something, your card that you use goes into a catnap state and therefore can't attack in the next round and then leaves itself open to be attacked. So if you've got a card that's in catnap state and it's got like 9 attack, then even if something else is attacking it that has a lower attack level, the thing attacking it won't take any damage, which otherwise it would just get instantly destroyed. Which I think is interesting. And then at the start of your turn, the card gets returned to your hand, so you can play it again if you want, or you can wait and play it at a different time.
Fair enough. All right, then. So Meow Wars is the name of that one. And that's... I don't know if it's free. Is that free?
I think it's free. Premium. Yeah.
Okay. So that's out right now. Also out this week is Dead Cells. Neither Rick nor I have played it, because it is a Switch thing. But John Monday did our review. He gave it a gold. He wrote loads of words about it. Masterful roguelike platformer, with some of the most satisfying combat around and a beguilingly appealing dark fantasy world to explore. That sounds like a lot of the other reviews that I've heard for this game. People are going mad for this one. Have you considered getting your Switchy? Is this the kind of thing that you would enjoy, do you think?
It's Metroidvanias, and no.
You're not that guy, no.
I hate Metroidvanias and I hate roguelikes.
Oh.
I just can't stand them.
A match made in hell for you. What's the problem with Metroidvanias then? Is it just they're revisiting old stages you've already been?
Yeah, it just feels a lot like busy work for me. I like a nice linear game. I'm really boring like that. I like a game that sort of says, this is the way you need to go now, so you do that, and don't go back on yourself at any point unless you absolutely must. Like, oh, okay, fair enough. And I don't like roguelikes because I just don't like the level of difficulty. So I think this kind of thing would just I would just get cross all the time.
Fair enough. I do, and I wasn't a Nintendo kid, so I never got to play like the original Metroid or the original Castlevania when I was younger, so I encountered them later in life. I think it's one of those things where the limitations placed upon the designers ends up being a massive benefit. So to me, it feels like, right, we're going to create this, rather than having to make sort of 25,000 individual little levels, we're going to create this one really good world and then utilize the same bits over and over again while changing stuff. So, which, I mean, roguelikes tend to do that with randomly generated levels, but with Metroidvania stuff, it's the idea of a gigantic ass map where you have to constantly retrace your steps because you've gone over to one area and you've found the key and you go, ah, I remember I passed the door like 50 rooms back. So you have to go all the way back there and unlock that door, which leads to a new bit. And you're constantly doing this. And this map is growing and growing and growing. And it does rely on you keeping track of where the hell everything is. And in some cases, in the good old days, drawing actual paper maps out to remember where the hell everything is, which I really like because it sort of makes it, hello, the police are on their way. There you go. Which actually makes you work a bit harder. And I've got some time for that. I did have a pad beside me when I was a kid for some games where you had to work out what was going on and keep track of stuff. And so people are saying things like Dark Souls, and which everyone says to anything with good slash difficult combat. But I don't know anyone who's said anything terrible about this yet, so it seems a fairly safe bet. It's only around £20, I think.
Yeah, it's not a full price game.
No.
But people are hailing it as if it was like a big AAA game. I think it is just a small indie studio who've made it as well.
Yeah, but people have got a lot of love. So Dead Cells, at least anecdotally and according to our reviewer, who I trust, John Monday, gold stars, very, very good indeed. As always, there are other games out. We've got a big list of stuff that we either haven't played or mentioned. Dust and Salt's out there. Hag's Castle has appeared. Momopoly. But if you want to go in and see the full list, go over there to Pocket Gamer and check it out. We've got them all on the front page, along with the reviews to go with them. That will do for this week. We'll be back with not only M, hopefully, but also an interview next week. So, in the meantime, go play some new games. We love you lots. And we'll speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.